Okay, we can start our practice. Please get comfortable with your posture and try to keep your back straight as much as possible. And take a few deep, long breaths. Breathe in through your nose and breathe out through your mouth. And gently close your eyes. Take a few more, couple of deep, long breaths. Breathe in through your nose and breathe out through your mouth to relax your body, free of tension. And try to observe your body from top of your head to the tips of your toes, to make sure your whole body is relaxed, free of tension. If your body feels relaxed, bring your attention back to focus on your mind. So you may have a busy morning, but you are here in this beautiful sanctuary. You may have a long day or a long week, but set all that aside and understand that you are here in this present moment. In this moment, you don't have to make decisions. Just become the observer of your own breath, become the observer of your own mind. And asking yourself a question, why am I here today? Because having the right intention and following through with that intention is important when it comes to practice. So let go of the worries of the future and the burdens of the past. Be here in this present moment. And this is the only moment that you can breathe. You cannot breathe for yesterday nor for tomorrow. And paying attention to your breathing will bring you to present moment each and every time. When you get distracted with your thoughts, cultivating love and compassion within ourselves and towards others is the foundation of our practice. Think to yourself, may I be well, may I be happy, may I be peaceful, may I be well, may I be happy, may I be peaceful. May I be well, may I be happy, may I be peaceful. Now send your loving and kind thoughts towards all of your family members. Think about them individually if you like. Send your loving and kind thoughts towards all of them. May all of my family members be well, be happy, be peaceful. May all of my family members be well, be happy, be peaceful. May all of my family members be well, be happy, be peaceful. And finally, send your loving and kind thoughts towards all living beings, human beings, non-human beings. Thinking thus, may all living beings be well, be happy, be peaceful. May all living beings be well, be happy, be peaceful. May all living beings be well, be happy, be peaceful. Now slowly bring your attention to focus on your ordinary breath. Don't force your breath. Just bring your attention towards your breathing and start to pay attention. When you pay attention to your breathing, you may start to feel a subtle sensation of your breathing. Maybe on your upper lips or inside your nostril, perhaps back of your throat. Or down in your belly or your chest as it arises with in-breath and falls away without breath. Wherever you feel that subtle sensation, and start to focus on that part of your body and try to keep your concentration there. When you try to do this, you may find yourself get distracted with your thoughts, sound, feeling, sensations. Whenever you notice that you got distracted, bring your attention back to focus on your breathing. This can happen many times. As many times as it happened, accept and acknowledge that you got distracted and gently bring your attention back to focus on your breathing. If you get distracted by your thoughts or feeling or sensation, please bring your attention back to focus on your breathing. Now please bring your palms together in front of your heart. Make a strong determination to practice meditation every day, even for a short time, to find happiness and balance within yourself. May no harm come to you. May no difficulties come to you. May you be well. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. Thank you very much, and you can open your eyes. Okay, let's do the chanting. Start with page 4. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dutiyampi Sangham Saranam Gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddham Saranam Gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammam Saranam Gacchami. Tatiyampi Sangham Saranam Gacchami. Anicca Vata Sankhara Upadvaya Dhammino. Upajitva Nirujjanti Tesang Sambe Sattha Avera Hontu. Sambe Sattha Abhyapajja Hontu. Sambe Sattha Aniga Hontu. Sambe Sattha Sukhi Attanam Pariharantu. Mano Pubbangama Dhamma. Mano Setta Mano Maya. Manasache Paduttena Basativa Karotiva. Tato nang dukkha manveti chakkhang vavahato padang. Mano pubbangama dhamma mano setta mano maya. Manasache pasannena Basativa Karotiva. Tato nang sukha manveti chayava anapaini.
Mind is the forerunner of all state. We believe in generous heart. May I become at all times, both now and forever, a protector for those who without protection, a guide for those who have lost their way, a ship for those, a sanctuary for those in danger, a lamp for those without light, a place of refuge for those, and servant to all in need. By means of this meritorious deed, may I never join with unwise, only the wise, until the time I attain Nirvana. Thank you. Good morning to all of you. I hope you had a good practice. if not too late now. And thank you all for coming and practicing. Today, I would like to dedicate today's meditation to Jeff, who is the son of Carol, who just bought these beautiful flowers. It's the 5th year anniversary of his passing. So I want to dedicate today's meditation to Jeff. If anybody would like to do that in the future in the meditation sessions, if you want to dedicate to somebody or your wedding anniversary, could be anything. So you are more than welcome to bring flowers. The reason, just a little bit about why we offer flowers to the Buddha. Just said a tiny bit of it. It's in Pali, when you offer the flowers, in Pali chanting, we do the offering called Pujemi Buddhaṃ Kusumena Nena Punyena Metena Labhami Mukkaṃ. I know you're not going to understand this. So, Puppaṃ Milayati Atayadamme. That's important. Kāyo Tatayati Vināsa Bhāva. So the meaning, and look at these flowers, how beautiful they are. And this is Buddha compared the flowers to our life. Like these flowers, they are so beautiful. Now they are bloomed. And what is the word you call when they fade away? Or? Wilt. Wilt and die. So our life is similar to that. Our life is and it blooming and beautiful. And then eventually, like everything in life, in permanent, including our life, is going to fade away. And that's the indication of offering flowers to the Buddha. And the other thing is, while they are blooming and beautiful and smell good, we have to enjoy them. Enjoy him to give it to somebody that you love, to appreciate, to the Buddha, or even let it be there and just enjoy looking at it. Life is also the same. It is impermanent, yet enjoy while you have it. Smell it, see the beauty of it, and enjoy it. So that's the meaning of. So I really appreciate Carol this morning bringing the flowers, and we're thinking about your son Jeff, and sending our prayers and the love. By saying that, today's the talk will be given by Gus. I think he's going to talk about further into impermanence.
Yes.
Yeah. Perfect. It's all yours. Thank you for doing this.
Sure.
And he had actually, this talk was given, it was really meaningful. So I invited him to share this with, because it was a different group, I just want him to share with today's. So that's why I asked him to do this. So thank you for doing this.
Yeah, I had already given this talk on July 15th. So for those of you who were here on July 15th, I apologize if this is going to bore you even more. I call this talk self-compassion to no self. There is suffering. This proposition, the first of the four noble truths, is the first assertion of the Buddha that I would consider to be a genuinely ontological statement according to the Greek philosophical tradition. That is to say, in a very showy and erudite way, that the first noble truth is the Buddha's overall assessment of reality. He is not saying that there is only suffering. Rather, he simply puts it out there that suffering is. He is positing a proposition as a statement of objective fact. He is making a point about the nature of existence as a whole. There is suffering. That should not surprise anyone. The statement is put out there dogmatically, true, but in this case, the dogma means what it originally meant in classical Greek, coming from doxa or doka, as teaching. Likewise, one of the denotations of the word dharma is teaching. Furthermore, because Sanskrit is an Indo-European language, I wouldn't be surprised to discover that both words in Greek and Sanskrit have a common root. There is suffering. Why would Gautama Siddhartha bother to state something so obvious as the First Noble Truth? Doesn't everyone experience suffering? And doesn't its ubiquitous presence affect all people from birth, which occurs through intense pain, up to death, which is the ultimate loss of existence? Well, we all know, don't we, the reason why the fact of suffering had to be stated out loud for all those with ears to hear? We all know why something so obvious has to be stated and repeated over and over until we think it, feel it, and absorb it into our very bodies. The answer to these questions, and the reason we need to be continuously reminded that there is suffering, is one of the chief weapons of Mara the deceiver, Mara the deluder, and Mara the doubter. The reason we need to be told that there is suffering is because there is denial. The first truth of suffering is stated as a fact, as certain, and as self-evident reality. It follows that to deny it would be insane, a word which literally means unhealthy from the Latin, non sano. The Buddha would tag insanity as a corrupted mind. To believe that this is the best of all possible worlds, as the 17th century philosopher and mathematician Leibniz would have it, would be for the Buddha a clear indication that one is not paying attention. As I see it, the other three noble truths morph the first one from an ontological, if also obvious, starting point to the personal and ethical response to suffering that Gautama Siddhartha discovered. That is to say, the other three noble truths address the issue of denial. Once suffering is faced squarely, one can ask, what is the cause of suffering? What is the way out of suffering? What is the practice that establishes wellness, happiness, and peacefulness? These are the questions that the other three noble truths answer. To deny the existence of suffering would be to step outside the Dharma, to hobnob with the unwise rather than the wise, would be to plunge into an abyss of ignorance and grow into a project of clinging to all the distractions that we use to avoid the most obvious fact of suffering. These distractions which feed the denial of suffering are the media, both in print and electronic, idle gossip and its lifelong partner, politics. And I will note here that the democratic process is not immune from gossip, for democracy can degenerate into mob rule, corrupted and developing into government by the they, taking its power from what they say, the anonymous they, who have no face because they speak from the fantasy projections born out of my own delusion. The distractions of material goods that bring temporary relief, but which always fall apart or become outdated with the speed of capricious fashion and fad. or we cling to dogmatic, in its other negative meaning, of closed-minded opinions, metaphysical truths which comfort us with the thoughts of eternal life. Such religious beliefs feed off the fear of death and the denial of suffering by attempting to prove that death really isn't death and that suffering can be magically removed by a superpower. Now remember what I mentioned earlier about Leibniz. He attempted to excuse God from all wrongdoing. It was simply denial that this is the best of all possible worlds. So how do we break this circle of madness? The first step is the first noble truth. There is suffering. We must not run away from that. I must think it, feel it, and breathe it. Gotama was not alone in his insight. A contemporary of his in Greece, Heraclitus by name, understood it. In the Roman era, Epictetus, Cicero, and Augustine knew it. Then later, Hobbes, Rousseau, Hegel, Schopenhauer, and Nietzsche, both of whom were influenced by Buddhism, Freud, Jung, Sartre, and Camus, not to mention countless novelists, poets, and psychologists have written about it. Even software engineers such as Brian Tomasik could ask the question in an online article entitled, "Is there suffering in fundamental physics?" Now I'm going to share with you something of my own personal history, which illustrates my own avoidance, that is, a circumventing of the plain facts of my own suffering in childhood within a project of denial. After that, I will talk about my Dharma practice and how the meditation on compassion for myself led me to understand the doctrine of no self in a way that is liberating. My father was a cruel man. I had conversations with him when I was a monk and after leaving the monastery in an attempt to determine for myself why he was so sarcastic and bitter. He consistently deflected my sincere and, I thought, tactful diplomatic queries regarding his childhood, his relationship with his parents and his siblings, with his standard line, "Stop psychoanalyzing me." His refusal to talk about anything personal with me was usually accompanied by the expletives common to parents in the 1950s, which I will not repeat now, just use your imagination. He probably detected, when I was still too little to notice, some gestures or characteristics of mine that seemed to him to be effeminate. He more than likely detected that there was something wrong with me, in his view, so he wanted to make sure that I became a real boy, just as Pinocchio wanted to be a real boy. His method of helping me, help I didn't ask for, by the way, was to call me by a nickname, which was a girl's name. My oldest sister, who was also cruel, found that amusing, so she started using the girl's name also. A teenage boy who worked with my father at a mink ranch also started using that name for me. I was a boy who was being told that I was a girl. And being called a girl was not intended as a compliment. It was considered an insult. That was plain to me. Here are the beginnings of misogyny. That experience alone would have been traumatic enough for a boy in the 1950s, with the Republicans, Eisenhower specifically, in the White House, and the junior senator from Wisconsin, Joe McCarthy, looking for communists under people's beds. But to heighten the experience, my father also insisted that I work with him at the mink ranch and on his milk route, so that he could continue to guide my spiritual growth by telling me how lazy I am, how worthless I am, these were his words, and how much I disgusted him. When the nuns in the grade school would quote Luke's gospel, I felt the sting of the words. This is from Luke's gospel, chapter 11, verse 11. Which one of you is a father whose son will ask him for bread and would hand him a stone? And if he asks him for a fish, will instead of a fish hand him a snake? I wanted to raise my hand and tell Sister Mary Constantine that I knew a father who had already handed his son stones and snakes. 5 decades later, and after years of therapy, after the death of my father, and after finding relief in sobriety, I met Joe from Woodstock, Illinois. He was the love of my life. I moved to Woodstock from Wisconsin in 2012 and thought that I would finally have a long and peaceful life with Joe. But when Joe died suddenly in 2020, the word suffering took on an even deeper meaning. Profound grief led me to give up my aversion to suffering and to embrace it. I seemed to have no other choice of utter despair. Death, in my view, is final and absolute. The only possible response to it is compassion for oneself. Grief is a death that brings peace if grief is understood as the occasion of compassion. Compassion for oneself. And as karmic impetus, it is compassion for others as well. Grief teaches something that is so basic to happiness and so essential to the Dharma that the Buddha is rightly considered a genius for discovering it. He says, don't grab at life, just breathe it in and exhale it. Even if a person attempts to hold their breath long enough, they will pass out, and as soon as they faint, they will start breathing again. It seems that even breath knows the wisdom of letting go. The word spirit itself comes from the Latin word for breath. Breathing is a spirituality. Here is a quote from Pema Chodron from When Things Fall Apart, her book. When we are nailed with the truth, we suffer. We look in the bathroom mirror, and there we are with our pimples, our aging face, our lack of kindness, our aggression and timidity, all that stuff. This is where tenderness comes in. When things are shaky and nothing is working, we might realize that we are on the verge of something. We might realize that this is a very vulnerable and tender place, and that tenderness can go either way. We can shut down and feel resentful, or we can touch in on that throbbing quality. There is definitely something tender and throbbing about groundlessness. It's a kind of testing, the kind of testing that spiritual warriors need in order to awaken their hearts. Sometimes it's because of illness or death that we find ourselves in this place. We experience a sense of loss, loss of loved ones, loss of our youth, loss of our life. That's the end of the quote. Find compassion in the Dharma, compassion for your grief and the grief of others. We can do this. Every breath is born and then it must die regardless of our wishes. The emptiness within us is not a prison. It is an open space as big as the universe itself. It is a freedom that we have never known before. And it is truly a bottomless, borderless, and unsurpassable freedom because it is not confined to an I. There is no I. There is no self. Consciousness of this person itself is a product of clinging to a persona and to our thoughts and volitions as if they were ours, as if they will endure in substantial entity. Stephen Batchelor says it like this: the self does not exist from its own side, as the Tibetans say, as an object that can be isolated and defined. The more you search for it, whether through meditation, philosophical inquiry, psychological analysis, or dissection of the brain, you will not, in the end, discover anything that corresponds to it. Nonetheless, this is not to deny that a self exists. It exists, but not in the way we instinctively feel it to exist. An empty self is a changing, evolving, functional, and moral self. In fact, and this is the twist, if the self were not empty in this way, it would be unable to do anything. For such a hypothetical self would be utterly dissociated from everything in the living world, existing in a purely metaphysical sphere, incapable of either acting or being acted upon. That's the end of the quote. The only way to stop taking everything personally, to get free of suffering, is to have insight into the truth that my ego has always been empty. Those who abuse me, wish me evil, and attack me will always miss the target because there is no target. In the meantime, I can let go of clinging to past offenses, pain, and abuse with the insight that the emptiness which holds compassion for myself and all living beings is pure and radical freedom. Namaste.
Thank you. That's wonderful. Does anybody have any questions or anything?
Objections?
Objections, of course. No? Anybody new today? Yeah. Please say your name.
Aaron,
thank you for coming and welcome to the temple.
Joni,
thank you for coming. Welcome to the temple. Okay. Yes. Hi, thank you. Thank you for coming and welcome to the temple. So, is that announcement for today? I think for yesterday. Anyways, I remember the announcement. So, we have a farmer's market on Saturday. We are looking for volunteers to help with the food preparation on Friday morning. And a lot of the help that need at the temple for cleaning, anything that you would like to offer, because helping from all the volunteers how this place runs. And then we have a day retreat. If you're somebody who is interested in to participate on a day retreat, which is from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., which include mindfulness meditation, loving kindness meditation, walking meditation, and sound therapy at the end of the retreat, which include lunch, Sri Lankan lunch, of course, vegetarian. So if you're interested in, please sign up. It's on Sunday. So, good? Okay. Thank you all for coming today, and have a great day. Thank you.